You Bet Your Life, Pascal's Wager and Modern Game Theory by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract of the talk, Blaise Pascal's famous wager regarding the existential foolishness of opting for materialism as a worldview may be expressed in Modern Game Theory as a simple 2x2 matrix game. We also suggest how it may be generalized to multiple worldviews. Gambling is now more popular in the United States than any time since the 19th century. We have state lotteries in nearly all of the states. The great gambling center of Las Vegas in Nevada has now been cloned on the East Coast as Atlantic City in New Jersey. And there are riverboat gambling in many of the major central rivers of the United States. And on top of that, there are casinos in many of the Indian reservations. It's estimated that 15 million people in the United States have some sort of serious gambling addiction, and that two-thirds of the adult population of the U.S. has placed some sort of a bet in the past year, and that the total of all these bets together runs into the hundreds of billions of dollars per year. But actually, all of us are gambling, and for much higher stakes than just money. We are betting our lives, even our eternal destinies. Perhaps the first person to recognize this was Blaise Pascal, born in 1623, died in 1662, in his famous work Pensées, Thoughts, which was not published until 1670, some years after his death. Blaise Pascal, in poor health all his life, died before he reached the age of 40. He is still noted, however, over 300 years later, as the inventor of probability theory and the inventor of a rather sophisticated mechanical calculator. He's noted as a major apologist for Christianity and as a significant figure in French literature. Pascal's wager looks like this. All of us live either like God exists or as though he doesn't. Now, we can't be 100% certain one way or the other, being finite creatures inside this universe. Thus, our life is a gamble. Will we live like he exists and take the consequences if we are right or if we are wrong? Or will we live like he doesn't exist and take those consequences instead? How will you bet your life? The theory of games. In the 20th century, Pascal's work of applying probability theory to games of chance has been extended to more complicated situations in real life, to investments, to diplomacy, to warfare, for instance. A good introduction to game theory was given in the December 1962 issue of Scientific American. To help us understand Pascal's wager, let us look at one of the simplest problems in mathematical game theory, the 2x2 matrix game. By matrix here, we're not referring to the science fiction film series or to the recent Toyota automobile, but to a mathematical object called a matrix, an array of numbers in a particular order. A 2x2 matrix is a collection of four numbers, here represented by letters, arranged to form two rows and two columns. So here, with the four numbers A, B, C, and D, A and B represents row 1, C and D represents row 2, and then turning around to look at the same thing from the perspective of columns, A and C represents column 1, and B and D represents column 2. A 2x2 matrix game involves two players. Say Ron, choose that name to remind us of rows, and Charles, to remind us of columns. Ron secretly chooses one of the rows as his play, in this case a 2x2 matrix game, one of the two rows. Charles covertly selects one of the two columns. At this point, neither knows what the other has selected. The two choices then, when they are announced by the judge, you need a third person to take the slips of paper on which these choices are written, if you like, and then to announce them. The two choices, when announced by the judge, determine a particular number in the matrix. Ron, say, chooses column 2, and Charles chooses, Ron chooses row 2, and Charles chooses column 1. And then the judge would announce 2-1, let's say. And that determines a particular number in the matrix. If this number is positive, then Ron wins that amount from Charles, say in dollars. If it's negative, he pays that amount to Charles, say in dollars, and that completes that turn of the game. And the game might consist of just one shot like that, or of a long sequence of them. An example. The character game is going to depend entirely on the values of the four numbers. Given the matrix at right, with the row 1 being 1 and 1, and row 2 being minus 3 and minus 4, if Ron chooses row 1, he will always win $1, let's say, from Charles. Charles will not want to play. But, of course, if this game is warfare, Charles may have no choice. Another example. This game would be more interesting if we had this matrix instead, where we have both a positive and a negative number in each row and each column. So, 1, minus 4, minus 3, and 1. Here, sometimes Ron will win, and sometimes Charles. One can, in fact, work out a best strategy for each. Let Ron play row 1, a fraction p of the time. And then, since he's playing each turn, he plays row 2, a fraction 1 minus p of the time. So, the two fractions add up to 1. Let Charles play column 1, a fraction q of the time, and so column 2, 1 minus q. Ron's expected winnings, if positive, or losses, if negative, will then turn out to be a weighted average of the four possible outcomes, that is, multiplying each outcome by the fraction of the time it will occur. The equation looks like this for Ron's expected winnings, or losses of negative. E, the expectation, equals four terms, and those terms include the first one A, the second one B, the third one C, and the fourth one D, which is the payoff, and then the other two terms in each of those four terms is the frequency at which that result is obtained. So the first one is PQ, that is Ron choosing row 1 and Charles choosing row 1, and that multiplied by 1's payoff A. And then the second term, P, Ron choosing row 1, and 1 minus Q, Charles choosing row column 2, and the payoff for row 1, column 2, B. And then the third term, 1 minus P, Ron choosing row 2, and Q, Charles choosing column 1, and its payoff, C. And then lastly, 1 minus P times 1 minus Q times D, for the last payoff, and each of them now choosing row 2 and column 2, respectively. For the second matrix game above, the one that we said was more interesting, we plug in A equals 1, B equals minus 4, C equals minus 3, and D equals 1. And with a little algebra, sorting the pieces around, we get four terms, 9PQ minus 5P minus 4Q plus 1. Well, consider the simple cases, then. If P and Q are both equal to 0, that is, Ron never plays row 1 and Charles never plays column 1, then the expectation value will be 1. And in that case where for a sequence of plays, they're always that way, then Ron will gain $1 each time the play goes. Huh? On the other hand, with P and Q both equal to 1, that is, Ron always plays row 1 and Charles always plays column 1, then the expectation value also turns out to be 1, and Ron will win $1 there as well. Sounds good for Ron so far, but doesn't stay that way. In the case where Ron never plays row 1 and Charles always plays column 1, then expectation today will be minus 3. That is, Ron will lose $3, or Charles will gain $3 every turn. And if Ron never plays row 1 and did something wrong there, I think it's if Ron always plays row 1 and Charles plays only row 2, then the expectation value is minus 4. Ron will lose 4, and Charles will gain $4. Ron's best strategy is to choose his P, his frequency of choosing row 1, so as to make E, the expected winnings, as large as possible. And Charles's best strategy is to choose Q, his frequency of choosing column 1, so as to make E as small as possible. Well, when you work this out, a little bit of calculus, I guess, Ron's best strategy is P equals 4 ninths. That is, Ron will play row 1 4 times out of 9, and then row 2 5 times out of 9. But the result will still be that E, the expectation, the expected winnings per play, will be minus 11 over 9. Minus 11 over $9, you work that out, it's about $1.22 per play that Ron loses. That is to say, this game is not a good game for Ron, and he would have to be extremely lucky to come out of this without losing seriously over the long run. Now, let's apply a 2x2 matrix game to Pascal's Wager. Set up as a 2x2 matrix game, Pascal's Wager looks like this. We let the rows represent Christianity, row 1, accepted, and row 2, Christianity, rejected. And we set up the columns like this. Christianity, true, column 1, and Christianity, false, column 2. And we still use the same letters, A, B, C, D, for these four places in the 2x2 matrix. And then we ask ourselves, what is the value of these places? The play of the game, player Ron is any living person who must either live as though Christianity is true or as though it were false. Player Charles, in this case, is, you know, who? Well, reality, or the Grim Reaper, or chance, or God, or something of the sort, because Pascal is not making an assumption at this point on what worldview is true. But whatever this is, reality, the Grim Reaper, chance, God, or something sort, will eventually reveal to each individual the wisdom or folly of that individual's choice. The crucial question in any matrix game is the relative values of the numbers. In the second case we looked at earlier before we got into dealing with Pascal's Wager, the reason why Ron was hooked into a tough game is that the negative values, minus 3, minus 4, in absolute value, were larger than the positive ones, 1 and 1. What are the values of A, B, C, and D for Pascal's Wager? Well, we started with the value of B, the last element there. And that's the case in which Christianity is false, and the player has rejected Christianity. Whereas we're going to take the alternative to Christianity to be some sort of materialism or secular humanism, which have been the view of the people that Pascal was trying to reach with this argument, namely gamblers, people who live as though life really doesn't make any sense. You're on your bed, that's it. But let's have some fun while we are, and let's play some games of chance, which give us thrills and that sort of thing. So we take the alternative to Christianity to be some sort of materialism or secular humanism with no survival after death. The payoff then, if there's no survival after death, has then been collected before death. And that payoff will vary pretty widely from person to person. But we're going to assign a value for D equal to 1 for a long life of health, wealth, and happiness. That is about the best sort of life you could expect to have on this earth. So we'll assign that to value 1. This is not going to need any exact calculations on those lines. Values of A and C, that is when Christianity is true. A value of A, Christianity has been accepted by the player, and it turns out to be true. Well, we're working here with Orthodox Christianity, biblical Christianity, and Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 25, verse 34, and then verse 46. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. These will go with him into life eternal." We could look at more passages in the Bible about eternal life, bliss of that, the joys of that, every tear wiped away, and all sorts of things like that. And it's fair to say that the value of A, then, is plus, positive, and infinity. I guess forever? It's going to be very nice, exciting, and all of that. What about the value of C? Christianity has been rejected, but, in fact, Christianity turns out to be true. Well, Jesus also speaks about that in the same passage, Matthew 25, verse 41 and 46. Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you who are cursed, into eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. These go into everlasting punishment." Well, that's scary, huh? Everlasting punishment, and it's fierce of some sort. Fire is one of the common pictures. Torment, gnashing of teeth. That sort of thing is the biblical picture in the various passages. So C equals negative number, negative infinity. We have one last value to take a look at, and that's value of B. Christianity turns out to be false, but in fact the player has accepted and lived like Christianity is true. I think Pascal was mistaken in thinking that if Christianity was false, but one accepted as true, nothing would be lost. That is, that B would equal zero. It seems to me that the Apostle Paul, with persecution in view, and having experienced a fair amount of it himself, says in 1 Corinthians 15:19, "If only for this life we have hope in Christ, we're to be pitied more than all men." Basically thinking the fact that a Christian may very well face rejection, hardship, loss of money, various other things of that sort. But this is only a finite loss. A person doesn't exist after he dies, though the Christian should do worse than others, perhaps. So we'll put B at minus one, as negative as having a long life of health and wealth and happiness is positive. Take a look. So the matrix for Pascal's wager looks like this now. The two rows, Christianity accepted and rejected, and the true columns, Christianity true and false. So the first element in the matrix, row 1, column 1, is positive infinity. The second element, row 1, column 2, is minus 1. The third element, row 2, column 1, is minus infinity. And the fourth element, row 2, column 2, is plus 1. Now the strategy. Given these values, what should Ron's strategy be? What should the strategy of the player be? And you might say, strategy? You only get one shot. Well, all right. But then we think of strategy in terms of what should I do and what would I recommend other people to do, given that I have concern for them as well. Charles, on the other hand, the reality is always going to play either Christianity true or Christianity is false. Either is one or the other. But by Pascal's premise, we don't know for sure what of those two, which of those two is correct. We're inside the universe. We're finite. We may make a mistake, something of that sort. Even the staunchest atheist, I have here, must agree, but we should say at least ought to agree, that there's at least a very small possibility, we'll call it E, that Christianity is true. After all, the atheist, too, is inside the universe, doesn't know everything, and, So, we'll let Q, the strategy of reality, if you like, equal E, where E is much, much less than 1. We're not saying that's actually the value regarding reality, but that for the sake of argument, with a person who is materialist and who is pretty sure he's right, but would have to grant that there's a small possibility that Christianity is true, we'll let Q equal E, where E is much, much less than 1. Well, Ron's expected winnings are the equation that we looked at back under our general discussion. E equals PQ times the first element A plus P times 1 minus Q times the second element B, and then plus 1 minus P times Q times the third element C plus 1 minus P times 1 minus Q times the fourth element E. Since E is much, much less than 1, then Q is going to equal E in these occasions, in these equations, and 1 minus Q will be approximately equal to 1. So we can simplify the equation, and we get this equation here. E is approximately equal to PEA plus PB plus 1 minus PEC plus 1 minus PD. Now we substitute in the values of A, B, C, and D, using 1 and minus 1 for B and D, but using N instead of infinity for A and minus N for C, because we're going to take a limit as N approaches infinity. The equation then will look like this. The expected winnings or expectation value is approximately PEN minus P minus 1 minus PEN plus 1 minus P. And if you look at that, you will see that, we'll leave that blank. So, that's the expectation value. As N approaches infinity, the first of the four terms in this equation becomes very large and positive. The third term becomes very large and negative, and the other two terms are negligible by comparison. They'll actually come out 1 minus 2p, something like that. Huh? And p is no more than 1. So. So for Ron to have the maximum winnings, he should choose p equals 1, because that will wipe out the third term, the negative term, and you will be left only with minus p and minus 2p, if you like, as a negative. But then EN will be the approximate value of the expected winnings, and that will become arbitrarily large as N approaches infinity, no matter how small E is. As we have here, for sake of argument, assumed that although E is a small value, much, much less than 1, it's still a positive value. It's a fraction. The result. Thus, as Pascal argues, one should always live as though Christianity is true, and, strategy, advise others to do the same. Many people over the centuries have been put off by this argument because of its allegedly low morality. It's rather immoral to make a decision on what life is about, if you like, on the basis of some kind of gambling-type argument like this, rather than trying to find out what the truth is. Well, let's go. But the argument's not a moral argument. It's a prudential argument. It reminds us that it's stupid to go through life without investigating religions in which the stakes are infinite. And yet there are many, many people who are doing that. They are essentially betting that Christianity is not true, though they have not really investigated what the evidence looks like. That, after all, is a good bit of what our website is about, investigating what the evidence looks like. What about other religions? Well, that brings us to the question of generalizing Pascal's wager. There are, indeed, more than two religions or philosophies in the world. It's not just Christianity versus secularism or materialism or something of that sort. What about Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, various New Age religions? Animism. Don't they count? Answer, yes, they do in some sense. Let's see. Pascal's wager may be generalized by expanding it into a choice among n different worldviews, small n in this case, not to be confused with the big N we were using in the limit back earlier. In modern game theory, this involves an n-by-n matrix rather than a 2-by-2 matrix. The diagrams and arithmetic are more complicated and were set out in an article I wrote for the Bulletin of the Evangelical Philosophical Society back in 1981. So if you can find a copy of that, you may have a chance to read that. The generalized result looks like this. Ron's optimum strategy here is to select only some combination of those worldviews which have an infinite heaven, an infinite hell, and no additional lives in which to guess again. I believe Orthodox Christianity is the only religion which satisfies these. This argument does not help us choose among religions which have an infinite heaven, an infinite hell, and no additional lives in which to guess again. One would then have to use evidence of some sort. What evidence do these religions actually have that they're true? Conclusions. Remember the advice of Jesus. Luke 12:58-59. Jesus says to the audience, as you're going to with your adversary to the magistrate, try hard to be reconciled to him on the way, or he may drag you off to the judge, and the judge turn you over to the officer, and the officer throw you into prison. I tell you, you'll not get out until you have paid the last penny. Saying, your situation is somewhat like that of being taken by an opponent to court, and your case is not a good one. You better try hard to be settled out of court, or in fact you will then have to face the penalty of being wrong. Well, that's essentially what Pascal's wager tells us. We are indeed betting our lives by the way we think and live on one worldview or another.